Thank you, Mr. Summers. Good afternoon to everyone, and a very happy Sabbath to you. Welcome to the guests that I see in the audience today. Glad you could join us for the service this afternoon. Of course, as always, welcome those who are on the webcast. Know there are many who cannot attend regularly, and it's a good reminder that there are many going through trials and need our prayers, and so they can come back with us. Last night, I did a quick Google search. Do Old Testament laws still apply to Christians today? And the one of the articles that I came across had an interesting summary at the beginning of it that I'll quote here briefly. The author wrote, "It's pretty common these days for people to dismiss Christians because they follow some of the rules in the Bible and ignore others. I found that this objection carries a lot of weight. And is not just with non-Christians. Many Christians have a hard time answering it, which is why we secretly hope it never comes up." And that was interesting to me, so I thought I'd use it as part of the introduction today, because I feel that I can relate to it in some respect. When others learn of my beliefs, whether at work or just running into people, and something comes up about the Sabbath or Christmas or what it might be, my experience has been different from what it may have been for others in decades past. Maybe it used to be more common for us to get pushback for our different beliefs. But today, almost strictly and entirely, I get a to-each-his-own type of response. You know, that's okay for you. You know, not a big deal. Rarely do they even show the slightest bit of curiosity. What are they thinking? What's going through their minds? Do they really not care that I believe differently? Or maybe they're afraid to ask? Perhaps it's like the author said. They purposefully avoid that topic of Old Testament law or anything that they're not well versed in because they can't explain it. So I'd like to pose a question to all of us. In regards to the Old Testament, how often do we study the book of the law? How often do we study what we call the Pentateuch, or is called the Torah, the first five books of the Bible? Now, none of us doubt the importance and value that it has, but it is very technical and can be hard to read through at times, and some of it really doesn't apply to us directly anymore. It's not required of us, some of what you read in the law. However, at the same time, we can still learn from them. Today, we're going to study a topic that we maybe don't study in great depth a lot, because it doesn't directly apply to us in our everyday lives. But I'd like to study the topic of the Old Testament priesthood. What was required of them? What God instructed them to do? What did God require of the sons of Aaron? When you think of the duties of the Old Testament priests, what comes to your mind first? What comes to your mind first? For me, it was sacrifice. They took care of the sacrifices every day. And that was a very big part of it. But the priesthood was responsible for a whole lot more than just the everyday sacrifices. I did a rough count, and I'm sure I didn't come close to the total count, but just through the books of Exodus and Deuteronomy, just a quick count, there were 38 chapters that specifically instruct the priests of their responsibilities. Of course, scattered in those chapters are instructions for all of Israel, but specifically for just the priests. There's a lot there that told them how to do their jobs each and every day. The title for the message this afternoon is, What is the Role of a Priest? What is the role of a priest? Let's start with the most basic, the most overarching responsibility that a priest has. If you would turn with me, please, to Hebrews chapter 8. To begin, Hebrews chapter 8. He uses a term here in chapter 8 that I think aptly describes, if in one word, what their role was. It is described here in Hebrews chapter 8. This, of course, is speaking of Jesus Christ. We're going to read beginning verses 1 through 3. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 1. Now, this is the main point of the things we are saying. We have such a high priest who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens. Verse 2, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord erected, not man. They were servants. A minister, a priest was a minister, a servant. We'll keep reading, though. Verse 3, for every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. Gifts and sacrifices, of course, a large part of what they did. Therefore, it is necessary that this one also have something to offer. Let's jump down to verse 6. And this is the word they want to draw out here in verse 6. But now he, Jesus Christ, he has obtained a more excellent ministry, inasmuch as he is also mediator of a better covenant, which was established on better promises. Brethren, a priest was a mediator. He was a mediator between God and Israel. What does mediator mean? You know, sometimes I really don't like dictionaries because they don't really tell you what you're looking for. But what I've learned was the better question to ask isn't just what the definition of mediator is what's its purpose? What's someone who's a mediator, what's their purpose? Why do they have that responsibility? Their purpose is to bring something together. To bring something together. The Old Testament priests were a line of communication. They were a mediator to establish a relationship between God and the nation of Israel, to maintain a relationship between God and the nation of Israel. They were a mediator. That was their overarching responsibility. And it was an extremely important role. They were held to a very high standard, much higher than the rest of Israel as far as who they could marry, different aspects of how they had to live their lives. God expected them to take their job seriously and follow his instructions carefully. In Malachi chapter 1, God corrects the priesthood for not taking their roles very seriously. Malachi chapter 1 in verse 6. Most of the book of Malachi is a correction for the priests. In verse 6 here, God says, a son honors his father, and a servant his master. If I then am the father, where is my honor? And if I am a master, where is my reverence? Says the Eternal of Hosts, to you priests who despise my name, yet you say, in what manner have we despised your name? Verse 7, you offer defiled food on my altar, but say, in what way have we defiled you? By saying, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And when you offer the blind as a sacrifice, is it not evil? And when you offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? Offer it then to your governor. Would he be pleased with you? Would he accept you favorably? Says the Eternal of Hosts. We'll pause there. God goes on to point out how they have not honored him with their sacrifices. And God takes this seriously. If you remember the story verses in Exodus, God killed two of Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, because they offered profane fire. They did not follow his instructions, and he struck them down. Let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 2. Another example where God punished priests for their lack of honor towards him, for not following his instructions on how to properly and reverently sacrifice to him and to serve him. 1 Samuel chapter 2. We're going to read beginning in verse 27 through 29. 1 Samuel chapter 2. The story here is about Eli. If you remember, Eli is the priest who raised Samuel. He's the one that Hannah came to, and he pronounced a blessing on her. But here in verse 27, Eli also had made some mistakes. Verse 27 of 1 Samuel chapter 2. It says, then a man of God came to Eli and said to him, thus says the Eternal, did I not clearly reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house. Did I not choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense, and to wear an ephod before me? And did I not give to the house of your father all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire? Verse 29, why do you kick at my sacrifice? Why do you not honor me? Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering, which I have commanded in my dwelling place, and honor your sons more than me, to make yourselves fat with the best of all the offerings of Israel, my people? It wasn't so much that Eli made mistakes personally, it's that he didn't take care of his sons' mistakes. They were evil, wicked men who were committing adultery, who were taking all the best food for themselves. They weren't offering sacrifices the way they should have. It was a very wicked thing they were doing, and God punished them for it. Dropping down to verse 31 of 1 Samuel chapter 2. Behold, the days are coming that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house. Verse 34. Now this shall be a sign to you that will come upon your two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. Next, jumping over to 1 Samuel chapter 4, it continues the account of when this curse or this punishment that God told Eli would happen. Verses 12 through 18 of 1 Samuel chapter 4. Again, God took this very seriously. Verse 12, then a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line the same day and came to Shiloh with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. Now when he came, there was Eli sitting on a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. What was happening, the ark of God had been captured or was going to be captured. And he was nervous. And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, what does the sound of this tumult mean? And the man came quickly and told Eli. Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were so dim that he could not see. Then the man said to Eli, I am he who came from the battle, and I fled today from the battle line. And he said, what happened, my son? So the messenger answered and said, Israel has fled from before the Philistines, and there has been a great slaughter among the people. Also, your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been captured. Verse 18, then it happened, when he made mention of the ark of God, that Eli fell off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died. For the man was old and heavy. He had judged Israel 40 years. God punished Eli and his sons because they didn't take their role seriously. The role of priest is very important, very involved. With the remainder of the message, I would like to look at three basic roles or three basic categories that the details of the priest roles fall under. And the first of that, first point of the three, or the first category of the three, is priests were administrators. Priests were administrators. They oversaw pretty much every aspect of religious life in Israel. A lot of physical work. Let's begin by turning to Leviticus chapter 6, looking at how priests were administrators. Leviticus chapter 6, it talks about the law of the burnt offering. Leviticus chapter 6. The priests offered sacrifices, a lot of sacrifices. And they had rotating shifts, especially as time went on in history. They had rotating shifts on who was on duty and who took care of the responsibilities. But they had a lot to do. We'll begin in verse 8 of Leviticus chapter 6 and read through verse 13. Then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, command Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the law of the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall be on the hearth upon the altar all night until morning, and the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it. And the priest shall put on his linen garment and his linen trousers. He shall put on his body and take up the ashes of the burnt offering, which the fire has consumed on the altar, and he shall put them beside the altar. Then he shall take off his garments, put on other garments, and carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. Verse 12, and the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not be put out. And the priest shall burn wood on it every morning and lay the burnt offering in order on it. And it shall burn on it the fat of the peace offerings. A fire shall always be burning on the altar. It shall never go out. So continually they were offering sacrifices and keeping the fire going. And then there are more details in Exodus chapter 29. These are the daily sacrifices it's referring to. Every day, the priests were offering a set amount of sacrifices, a minimum of two sacrifices. That we'll read about that in, it's Exodus chapter 29. Exodus chapter 29, there's more details on the daily sacrifices. What's interesting is, as we read through this, it gives more details. It's not just slaughtering an animal or killing an animal and then throwing it up on the altar and burning it. There was a lot of work that went into it every single time. Verses 38 through 42 of Exodus chapter 29. Exodus chapter 29 and verse 38 through 42. Verse 38, now this is what you shall offer on the altar. Two lambs of the first year, day by day, continually. One lamb you shall offer in the morning, and the other lamb you shall offer at twilight. So one in the morning and one in the evening. With the one lamb shall be one-tenth of an ephah of flour mixed with one-fourth of a hin of pressed oil and one-fourth of a hin of wine as a drink offering. Verse 41, and the other lamb you shall offer at twilight or in the evening, and you shall offer with it the grain offering and the drink offering as in the morning for a sweet aroma, an offering made by fire to the Lord. This shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations at the door of the tabernacle of meeting before the Eternal, where I will meet you to speak with you. So two times a day, once in the morning and once in the evening, they had to process a lamb. Now tomorrow, I have the privilege of slaughtering a lamb. We enjoy eating lamb, so about once a year I slaughter a lamb. And we thought about doing two this year, but then I thought, I don't think I'm going to have the energy to do two. It's a lot of work. I mean, if you think about the hunters, they go out and they shoot a deer or an elk or whatever it might be. They have to field dress it, skin it, process all the meat. It takes time. This is exactly what these priests were doing every day, twice a day minimum. They had a lot of work to do. Now, they were a lot more efficient than I will be, so that helps, but it's still a lot of work. I mean, you look at a butcher shop, they're actually pretty quick, you know, with all the equipment they have and stuff, but they also know what they're doing, so it goes pretty quickly, but it's still a lot of physical work. Now, in addition to every day, once in the evening, once in the morning, offering up a lamb, a burnt offering, that means burning the whole thing, they would skin it, give the skin to the priest, cut up the rest of it and put it on the altar and burn it completely. In addition to that, every Sabbath, you add two more lambs. Every first of the month, you add more. And that's for that day. So you do the daily offerings plus the others. Each feast, you would offer more. And all the other important events, all the commemorations, all the dedications, when there's a new priest, like when they dedicated the temple. And then there's all the individuals who came giving a free will offering. If they needed cleansed for something, some impurity, if they were completing a vow, if they just voluntarily wanted to give an offering, the priests had to assist them in all those things. And this was a daily responsibility. I don't know if this is how accurate this number is, but it's close. I was doing some reading, and during just the Feast of Tabernacles, they would offer somewhere around 170 sacrifices during that week. That's a lot of work. So a priest had a great amount of responsibilities, a lot to do each and every day. And this only covers a small portion of the sacrifices. They administered a lot of other things too. Let's turn over to chapter 30 of Exodus, just one page over, verses 7 through 8. They also had evening and morning responsibilities, the high priest did, with burning daily incense. Verse 7 of Exodus chapter 30. Aaron shall burn on it sweet incense every morning. When he tends the lamps, he shall burn incense on it. And when Aaron lights the lamps at twilight in the evening, he shall burn incense on it, a perpetual incense before the Eternal throughout your generations. Another smaller responsibility, but still something that had to be tended to. the priests were also overseeing the maintenance and just upkeep of the tabernacle. In the wilderness, they would move it a lot. If you remember, God would lead them to where they needed to go, and when he indicated by cloud or by pillar of fire it was time to go, they had to pack up the camp and leave. Well, every time you do that, you tear down the tabernacle, pack it all up, and you carry it on. They were responsible for doing that. They were responsible for all the holy things, the lamps, the showbread. Everything that was within the tabernacle was under their care. And of course, the Levites would help and assist them in the responsibilities God gave them. But the priests oversaw it. Another task, another responsibility they had to administer was the blowing of the trumpets for communicating with the people, to move camp, for a battle, to assemble either the leaders or all of Israel together. And they were also responsible for singing praise to God, to put together choirs and groups of musicians to sing praise to God. All of this was part of their daily routine, part of their role as administrators. The second point, the second category for the role of the priests were that they were judges. Point number two is priests were judges. They were judges in Israel. Anytime that there was a legal matter or some kind of a dispute that was too difficult for others to determine, it would come up the ladder to the priests. They were the ones who would then need to make a final decision. Deuteronomy chapter 17. Deuteronomy chapter 17. We'll look at two quick verses here that point out their responsibility as judges. They weren't the only judges in Israel, but they were, if you will, the Supreme Court. Deuteronomy 17. We'll begin reading in verses 8 through 9. Deuteronomy 17, verses 8 through 9. If a matter arises which is too hard for you to judge, between degrees of guilt for bloodshed, between one judgment or another, or between one punishment or another, matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise and go up to the place which the Eternal your God chooses. Verse 9, and you shall come to the priests, the Levites, and to the judge there in those days, and inquire of them. They shall pronounce upon you the sentence of judgment. Verse 12, dropping down to verse 12 and 13. Now the man who acts presumptuously and will not heed the priest who stands to minister there before the Eternal your God, or the judge, that man shall die. You shall put away the evil from Israel, and all the people shall hear and fear, and no longer act presumptuously. So they had the responsibility here of being the judge, and God gave them that office. And if it was disrespected, there was punishment for it. If there was a problem, legal matter of some kind, it would come to the priests. Another example of this same thing is just a few chapters over in 21, Deuteronomy 21 and verse 5. Deuteronomy 21 and verse 5. The heading here in chapter 21 says law concerning unsolved murder. So difficult circumstances that needed to be judged and determined. Verse 5, when it came to it, it says, then the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near, for the Eternal your God has chosen them to minister to him. God chose the priests to serve him in this way, to minister to him and to bless in the name of the Eternal. By their word, every controversy and every assault shall be settled. The buck stops here. They had to make those decisions. But they didn't only judge legal matters. They also judged impurities or medical conditions. And it was more than just being a judge over legal matters. Let's go to the New Testament again, Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, an example here where the priests were responsible for making a judgment. Luke chapter 5. This is one of the examples of leprosy in the New Testament. There's the example of the 10 lepers, and this is just one man here. Luke chapter 5, we're going to read verses 12 through 14. Verse 12, and it happened when he was in a certain city, Jesus Christ, that behold, a man who was full of leprosy saw Jesus, and he fell on his face and implored him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then he put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. Immediately the leprosy left him. Verse 14, and he charged him to tell no one, and said, but go and show yourself to the priest, and make an offering for your cleansing, as a testimony to them, just as Moses commanded. Just as Moses commanded, they were to go see the priests to make a judgment whether their leprosy was clean or not. Back in Leviticus chapter 13, I apologize for jumping around so much, but it actually goes through a little bit. We'll read a few verses on what the priest was expected to do for those with leprosy. They were expected to make the judgment. And if you remember, we read back there in Luke 5, there was also a cleansing ceremony. They had to offer a sacrifice as a part of their cleansing. So again, the priests were to administer that. Verse 1 through 8 of Leviticus chapter 13, it goes through some details of what the priest would have to do in order to judge whether the leprosy was gone. And the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, when a man has on the skin of his body a swelling, a scab, or a bright spot, and it becomes on the skin of his body like a leprous sore, then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest, or to one of his sons, the priests. The priest shall examine the sore on the skin of the body. And it goes through all the details. Down in verse 8, it says, and if the priest sees that after a certain amount of days, they had to go through, I'm skipping through it a little bit, but they had to examine them, and in them 7 days, send them off, and they would come back. And if it was still an issue, send them off for 7 days. So this was a long cycle. The lepers would have to come back to see if their skin had cleared up. But the point here is that the priest had to make the judgment. They had to know medically what the condition was and what the scripture taught them. Verse 8, and if the priest sees that the scab was indeed spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is leprosy. So they had a great amount of responsibility to make judgment, to make judgments on many different things, legal matters, medical issues, all kinds. But they also had to teach, and that's the third point. The third point, or the third category of the role of a priest, is priests were teachers. Priests were teachers. Leviticus chapter 10, just a page or two back. Leviticus chapter 10, and this is a good transition verse between their roles as judges and their roles as teachers, and it applies to both. Leviticus chapter 10, beginning in verse 8. Then the Eternal spoke to Aaron, saying, do not drink wine or intoxicating drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. Why does God say this? Why are they not to drink? Verse 10, that you may distinguish, that you may judge between holy and unholy, and between unclean and clean. Verse 11 continues, and that you may teach, that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Eternal has spoken to them by the hand of Moses. The priests were teachers of Israel. They were teachers of Israel. We went to Malachi at the beginning of the message where God was correcting the priests. And I'll just have you jot down as a reference Malachi chapter 2, verse 7. During this correction that God was giving the priests, he told them that they needed to know the law. They had to have the knowledge on their lips of his law so that they could teach and that they could do it properly. In Nehemiah chapter 8, we have a great example of Ezra the priest, the scribe, teaching Israel. And I'd like to turn there as an example of the priests teaching Israel. Not just reading to them, but teaching them, explaining things to them. We're going to begin reading verse 1, and then we're going to jump down to verse 7. Nehemiah chapter 8, and if you remember, Israel, some of the Israelites had come back from captivity, and Nehemiah and Ezra were working on the temple and establishing sacrifice and all those things again. Verse 1 of chapter 8, now all the people gathered together as one man in the open square that was in front of the water gate. And they told Ezra, the scribe, to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Eternal had commanded Israel. So they pull out the book of the law, and this is on the holy day. Verse 7. Also, Yeshua, Bani, I'm not going to try to read all those. I was going to try, and I'm just not going to do a good job. We'll drop down to the end of the verse. It says, all these Levites and these priests helped the people to understand the law, and the people stood in their place. Verse 8, so they read distinctly from the book in the law of God, and they gave the sense and helped them to understand the reading. The priests help the people to understand. They didn't just read the law. They taught them. They spent time with them, teaching them, expounding on the scriptures. Verse 9, and Nehemiah, who was the governor, Ezra the priest, and the scribe, and the Levites who taught the people, said to all the people, this day is holy to the Eternal your God. Do not mourn nor weep. For all the people wept when they heard the words of the law. It had been so long since they had been taught that they wept. Verse 10, then he said to them, go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet, and send portions to those for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy to our Eternal. Do not sorrow, for the joy of the Eternal is your strength. Verse 11, so the Levites quieted all the people, saying, be still, for the day is holy. Do not be grieved. And all the people went their way to eat and drink and to send portions and rejoiced greatly. And what I really want to get to here is because they understood the words that were declared to them. The priests had a great responsibility here to teach the people God's law. To teach God's law. And the people rejoiced because they understood. Brethren, the Levitical priests had many major responsibilities on their shoulders. And we have only touched on parts of those details today. Just some of those details. There's much more in Scripture that we can learn from to understand how much they were responsible for. They had administered a lot of sacrifices, a massive amount of sacrifices, every day throughout the year. They maintained the house of God and everything in it, all the holy things in it. They blew trumpets, they sang praise. They were God's servants, the mediator between him and his people. They also had to know the law in order to judge and to teach. They had a great responsibility, and as important and as vast as the Levitical priesthood had a role, it was over all of Israel. Brethren, we're going to be given an even greater responsibility in the future. Let's begin concluding by turning to Revelation chapter 20. It's a verse that we're going to be very familiar with over the next few weeks, but it's very fitting for this topic as well. Revelation chapter 20 and verse 6. Going through all those examples and some of those details today, we can see how great the responsibilities were. But we will be responsible over much more. Verse 6 of Revelation chapter 20. Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such the second death has no power. But they shall be priests. This is speaking to us, brethren. We shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. We will be priests serving under God over the entire world, not just a single nation. The book of Revelation talks about he who overcomes. 8 times is mentioned just in the book of Revelation. And in different ways, in different aspects, it says, he who overcomes ultimately shall inherit all things. This is something we all want to be a part of, brethren. We want to inherit all things. Through Israel's history, the priests offered millions and millions of pounds of sacrifices to God. And he was pleased by it, at least some of the time. Remember, we looked at the example of Eli and his sons, those whom God corrected and killed because they didn't fit the description that we're going to read in Psalm 51, verse 17. They went through the motions. They offered sacrifices every day, just like the law said. But there was something that was not pleasing to God. Something was not pleasing to him, and he despised their offerings for good reason. Psalm 51 and verse 17. This is why God was upset with them, because they did not fit the description of Psalm 51, verse 17. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. Brethren, we can have all the knowledge in the world, all the skills and talents, all the wealth, but if our heart is wrong, it doesn't matter at all. God will not accept vain and meaningless sacrifices, just going through the motions. He cares about our motives, and he cares about our heart. Brethren, let's all do our part in preparing both our knowledge and our hearts for our awesome calling to become priests of God in Jesus Christ.